life without hope. Now that's living hell.
This is what real hope looks like. This is the word that those hopeless people need to hear. This is the word that 3,000 people that try to commit suicide today, the 3,000 that will try to commit tomorrow, 3,000 that will try to commit on Monday, this is the word that they need to hear, is that there is hope.
It's real superpower. It's hope. There's hope. Hope.
Welcome to Victims and Villains. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. I'm your host, Captain Nostalgia, and I'm so glad that you survived Halloween the night that he came home, because this is our Halloween review episode, and I am joined by the ever-talented Mr. Blair Webb.
What's going on?
So, man, it's so good to actually have you on, like, a full-length episode.
Hey, I'm happy to do it, man, anytime.
So for those of you guys that don't know, Blair, actually, we met him at Pop Comiganza back in November of last year, and he was also on our Great Philadelphia podcast, or Great Philadelphia Comic-Con episode. And if we got any new listeners, or just to refresh old listeners, tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about the series that you do.
Well, I'm involved in a few different things right now. Primarily, my book is Ghost Man. It's an ongoing, it's my own personal, like, the mark for the world, if you will. That's my own ongoing series. Then I have Hold Up Magazine, which I'm doing currently, which supports local bands, local artists, local models. And then, of course, I'm also working with a number of other little projects on the side, and I'm also part of the Living Corpse crew now, which we're just finished launching the new Kickstarter. We're working with David McAleenie. If you're not familiar, he's the co-creator of Venom. He's the writer. We just did Living Corpse Hex Files. We launched the Kickstarter and it funded in a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's unheard of.
It was just insane. We put it out there, and it was like, okay, and we're done. Good job. That was
That's
awesome.
Amazing.
And I'm actually getting a full page pinup in this one, so I'm really excited. I can't really share that yet with anybody, but it's a lot of fun. And I like that though. I like having some of the stuff. It's like it's done, but I got to keep it a little bit secret. I also just finished a kid's book. With a very talented writer, Brian Perry. That'll be out probably by Christmas. It's a quick little story about a character. It's Lucy Potts, Clean Your Room. And it's simple and it's nice. It's just something that I've never explored before, so I wanted to do it.
So what's it kind of like ghost, like a lot of your content's like very primarily like gothic and horror-based. What's it like kind of moving from something like that into a medium like children's books?
Insane. Just the reason I say that, it's like, especially with how regimented the people that you end up working with are, they're like, we have to have her smiling. You have to have her. It's just weird because you go from drawing monsters to drawing this really cutesy little girl. It's like, really? Okay, I'm going to draw this little girl for, and then I think there was one issue or one scene where there's a large, like, dream sequence and there's a monkey, and I kept having to redraw it, man, because it was like, you know, they're like, yeah, but the monkey just looks evil. I'm like, yeah, I know, I'm sorry. I'm real sorry about that.
I mean, that happens.
I mean, well, you go from that to this, you know, it's nice though. It was good to explore that because now I'm including a little bit more of that in some other things that I do so that I have this, if you will, like another altogether, another style of just almost, accessing like my Disney side, if you will, you know? So you're drawing more cutesy characters and whatnot just for fun.
Yeah, and I mean, that's that kind of stuff too. It allows you to kind of get out there to a bit of a bigger audience. So, like, if you want to look at, you know, I think Jamie Lee Curtis, who stars in this Halloween movie, is a great example about that. Like, I grew up on her. Like, I didn't grow up on Halloween. Like, to me, she was like Arnold's. She was True Lies and, you know, Freaky Friday.
Oh, sexy Jamie Lee.
Yeah, so like, like that kind of side was kind of what I grew up on. And then as I started kind of getting more into horror, like, it was like, okay, Halloween, Halloween 2, Halloween H2O, and when you kind of look at how she has evolved in her career, it just, there's a little bit of something for everyone in this. And, you know, I think that that really challenges you as an artist to grow out of your comfort zone and tackle new areas as well.
Absolutely. It's a blast. I mean, anytime I can, I try not to turn any gigs down. Like, I'm also like learning, you know, there's the punk rock flea market that we just did. I made a lot of different connections with that. So I'm hoping to, maybe branch out even more and just change up a bit of a style there as well. Maybe do some like punk rock t-shirts. And I just recently also did the cover of the album for The Lot, which is a Philly punk band. So it's just taking on different mediums and trying different things. I mean, I've never say that I'm a painter per se, like, but it's not that I won't try it. It's just that I just don't feel comfortable with it yet, you know, but it's not that I'm not going to ever try it. So somebody was like, I want you to paint me. I'd be like, all right, let's see how that works out.
And it's really cool. And like, I love being able, I think you're probably one of my favorite artists to follow on Instagram, because you have like this like monster side, but then you also have like this side where you kind of get to show like the punk bands that you support through Hold Up, and also the, you know, these other projects that you're starting to take on. So it's cool to kind of see that diversity in the feed.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. It's working out. I mean, I love doing that. I love doing the videos, because then I can put on like one of the punk bands or whatever that I'm listening to at the time and just rock out. And hopefully somebody's watching that and seeing what I'm doing. If they pick anything up from it, that's even more of a plus for me.
Absolutely. And I don't want to actually retread kind of old areas that we've done. So if you guys haven't checked out our previous interviews with Blair, a little bit more in depth with the series and Hold Up and just everything else that he's been doing, click the links in the descriptions below. If you guys are listening to this on iTunes, go check out the episodes Mark Pop Comiganza and the Great Philadelphia Comic Con Days 1 and 2. But I want to jump in to talk Halloween, because this is going to go down probably as one of my favorite films of this year. And I know that we've talked a little bit about it off air. Here's the way we're going to do this is we're going to give general thoughts. And then as usual, we're going to take a commercial break and then jump into spoilers afterwards. So just kind of general thoughts on this, like what walking out of this film, what did you think of it?
Well, I made sure that I didn't want to, didn't spoil anything for myself. I actually didn't even watch one preview. So I was really happy with myself for that. And I just absolutely loved it. I loved the way that the pacing of it. I loved every aspect of it was really right there. Even right from the jump with the credits and the pumpkin. You see that? That was beautiful.
Love that.
I'm trying not to spoil anything, but yes, my opinion of it was it was a wonderful, wonderful film. And you need to, if you're a fan of Halloween in any way, you need to see this. It's like something that just, yes, absolutely need to see this movie. Watch the first one first and then go watch this. Skip like half the others.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there's, I loved this. I loved the opening sequence with kind of the reintroduction of Michael to the pumpkin and the classic nature of this film, but also the pacing in this was just really well. I think that a lot of my problems that I had with the film lied a little bit in some of the tropes and cliches of like the third act. Like, they were trying to pay homage to the original so much that the film almost kind of felt predictable in some cases. But I mean, still, like, this is a, this definitely lives up to the original. Whereas the, like, Halloween 2 from 1981, if you listen to that, like, I wasn't really a fan of the way that, like, a lot of that was handled. I felt like a lot of the good parts were, like, undermined it, and a lot of the bad parts were, like, overmined it. So I really, really loved this. I gotta give you credit, man. It, like, I don't know how people nowadays can just, like, not watch trailers.
Well, it's one of those things, man. If you really, I mean, once I saw, I heard the announcement, and because I go to Monster Mania and everything, so I had heard it about a little bit prior to, I guess, it being, like, full-on announced. So I was like, okay, well, I don't want to see anything at all. Like, I'm a fan of Nick Castle and, like, his page, so it was really hard to just not talk to him about it, not go around that. The only thing I saw was the one thing that I was included in, which was the, I have a gig November 3rd with John Passarella. He's the guy that did the novelization for this movie, and he'll be doing a signing on November 3rd at Between Books. And I was like, I threw out there, well, let's get yourself drawn as Michael Myers. But other than the poster and for that book, I was like, that's it. That's the only thing that I had seen. I was like, this is perfect. Walking in there completely blind. Loved it.
Wow, so you went in to, like, completely blind, like, no promotional images, no posters, just, no TV just, spots, well, just nothing.
Yeah, just went, I mean, like, you know, if it even was a mention of it on the Facebook, it's just, like, fly through the scroll. Just don't even look. It was fun. I enjoyed it. It brings you back to, like, how you used to see a movie, you know, when you were a kid, and it's like, you had no idea. You walked in there, and it's like, you either loved it or you hated it. Now, I wanted that decision then, and not, you know, by kind of prejudging it in my head as to what it might be.
Yeah, I can respect that. That's, like, my goal for 2019 is to, like, get to a place where I can just, like, not watch trailers and just kind of go in blind. But, man, my anticipation for this was, like, through the roof. They were like, they could have just shown, like, a brief scene, and I would have just been like, wet pants, you know?
Well, like, it goes to, like, I'm sure everybody here has seen the Venom movie at this point. It's, there's a lot of mixed feelings about that. And that again, was another one where I had hopes for it. I did the same thing. Didn't really focus too much on all of it. And then a buddy of mine was like, you have to see the transformation of the suit. I'm like, all right. So I checked that out a little bit. But I had a feeling that it wasn't going to be able to live up to my expectations. And I was right.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, I was really excited for Halloween. I was like, okay, so this is perfect. Thank God it kind of, like, you know, brought me back. I saw both of those within the same week, so it was like, all right.
Boosting spirits up, and that's what we're all about here. But we're going to take a quick commercial break, and on the other side of that commercial, we are going to talk Halloween spoilers and kind of go a little bit more in depth with our thoughts. But before we do that, if you guys are listening to this right now and you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, please reach out. It's the reason that we push this content, so that you guys can know that there is hope and that there is a better way and that there is a tomorrow. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. There are 123 suicides that take place each and every day right here in our own backyard. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That's one death every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, you guys can reach out to us on any of our social media, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. You guys can call the Suicide Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255 or also text anonymously to 741-741. Or you guys can go to victimsandvillains.net/hope, where you guys can get even more resources past those. And we have a ton of resources available for you guys, and even some reading if you guys want to dig a little bit more into just how big of an issue suicide and depression really are. And with that, we will be right back to talk Halloween spoilers.
Michael escaped. He waited for this night.
Brace yourselves.
I waited for him.
Halloween, rated R.
All right, we are back. You guys have been warned that just as Michael is escaping Smith's Grove, we are escaping the non-spoiler territory.
Oh, no.
So, I mean, I guess you brought it up first. I want to jump in. Like, the first thing I want to jump in, kind of like the classic pumpkin montage from the original film.
That was awesome.
Like, I loved it because, like, to me, like, it was a dead pumpkin starting out, and then it was, like, growing back into what you had originally seen in the 1978 film. And it almost kind of, like, to me, it signalized, like, here was a dead franchise that we're now breathing new life back into.
Life into, yeah. And with that score, with the John Carpenter's score, it was so, it just ran, you know, I had goosebumps watching that thing come back to life. Between that and then everything, I mean, how spoiler free can we, or we're just going all spoilers at this point, right?
Spoilers, let's go.
Just doing it. Well, I loved every single one of those scenes where it's like, okay, this is what's going on, but if you're not paying it, I love the out in the distance, Michael's fucking murdering the guys in the fucking gas station. He's out, you know, just every little thing, and it's all blur, but it's all in the background. If you're paying attention, it's like, this is really fucking going on, while they have no fucking clue. Did you catch all of those?
Yes. And I love that because, like, it the way when you watch it, so, like, Halloween is roughly about 15 minutes shy of a two-hour movie. But it feels like for the first half of the film, like, a lot of the kills that what you're seeing aren't, like, super gory. Like, they're a nod to the original one. And a lot, I think, what made the first, like, the original film so terrifying and so iconic now is that it chose not to show these scenes or show the process of how they died. And they definitely nodded to that a lot in these first couple of scenes, like you were talking about. You kind of don't see it, but then you kind of see him in the background, and it really kind of brought that level of fear and terror to the forefront of what I feel like a lot of these modern day horror films, or like at least slasher films, really almost lack.
Yeah, absolutely. And just everything from that, then the teeth, and then how about that the scene with the hammer? That was great. He just goes in, grabs the hammer, beats the girl to death, then goes back and gets the knife.
when he's kind of unleashed into Haddonfield, like, John Carpenter had this original vision, and I've been listening to, I don't know if you listen to podcasts or not, but one that I have been recommending people all month that are like Halloween junkies is The Ringer put out this podcast called Halloween Unmasked. And Halloween Unmasked, like, it goes through like the legacy of Halloween, like as a franchise.
Okay, the legacy, okay.
Just literally from like conception, like how John Carpenter crafted him to, I mean, like it goes way into depth. But you know, they were kind of talking about how, like, they had done an episode in which they were talking about man, I think I just lost what I just said.
Well, you did have that whole lore in the background of the original book, which was the whole he is evil personified.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to go for.
It's not any kind of I think when Rob Zombie kind of took it over, he kind of derailed it a little bit and made it more of a serial killer, and, you know, kid growing up, and it identified with some things, but it didn't give you that feel anymore, like that whole eerie, almost demonic feeling that was inside Michael was gone. You know, it was just like, okay, well, now he's this monster of a monster serial killer, if you will. But yeah, I like the fact that, yeah.
what I was going to say was, like, and you see that, like, that he originally was just kind of personified as evil and this boogeyman that, you know, when you hear Carpenter talk about it, a lot of people, the first film, he wasn't Michael Myers. He was the Shape. And that is very much, I feel like, what you get for the first probably half hour that he's unleashed onto Haddonfield. Is he's just got this, like, machine going. Like, the oil is just going within him. And, I mean, you know, from that scene, like you were talking about, with, you know, just grabbing the hammer and just literally just going in and just beating that woman down, to the next one that even he had with the girl. And, I mean, the body count for this movie is on the high side. But I think that you need that to kind of, like, really reestablish that Michael isn't just a serial killer or the boogeyman, but he is, like, he has no reason, he has no motive, and that's just what makes him terrifying.
Yes, absolutely. And if you know, you really, there isn't a serial to it. Like, I guess the idea that he was after, you know, just trying to get after his sister, but he had no rhyme or reason. I mean, remember the kid that fell in the middle of the yard, and, oh man, I love that scene with, like, the motion sensor light, and it goes off, and he's like offering him a beer 1 minute, and he's like, wait, you're right there now, okay, creeping me out a little bit. He just, like, ran while the light was off.
Yeah, I love that. Man, awesome. Like, that was probably one of the best scenes in the whole movie, and I love that scene. Just like you were talking about, and you talked about, you know, kind of like he offers him a beer, and he's almost kind of like, there's almost kind of like this, that therapeutic moment where he first spots Michael and he's, like, trying to communicate with him because, like, he pretty much just got his heart broken and rejected by the girl of his dreams. And, you know, he's like, yeah, you know, you want a beer? And there's a lot of comedy in this film that I think I wasn't expecting. I don't know if you were expecting that. Like, I don't really remember there being such great comedy in previous installments of the franchise.
Well, I think they were trying to that with the comedy element. I think what they're going for, and it works. They humanize some of the victims, which works great. And you get that, the camaraderie and the jokes and everything between all of them, with the all right down to the one kid that right in the beginning puts an M80 or whatever in a pumpkin just to blow it up, you know, just for funsies and whatnot. But yeah, there's a few different jokes, and I enjoyed them. I thought that was it was good to establish that, and it added to when the girl started to realize and saw Michael for the first time, when after that one kid died, it was like it all hit home for her. Like, oh my God, this is everything that my grandmother was telling me is real. And then that one moment she got to run around the whole street and realizing that some of the street's been evacuated, most people aren't letting you in, because he was on the loose.
Yeah, and I to me, like, I'm gonna come back to that in a second. I want to stick on comedy for just a minute or two, man. That like it was there. And like you get a few jokes here and there, and I feel like it's kind of how, like you're talking about, like, that's how we humanize a lot of these characters today, because a lot of these blockbusters, a lot of these bigger films, it almost kind of seems like in order to succeed or to be well received, you have to have a little bit of those comedic elements in it. And Halloween's just never a franchise that I've kind of associated with it. Like, I know, like, they've had their moments in the past, but this one I felt like was just kind of, you get a little bit of humor here and there, and then you meet the kid that the one girl babysits, and you are literally crying laughing until Michael shows back up on the screen.
It was great with the Alakazam jokes.
Yeah,
he was like, I know what Alakazam is. That was funny.
Oh, and like just his reaction to Michael was like something like, "Oh, F no," and then he just like started running. And he's like, Dave.
Yeah, you go. You should have sent her. What are you doing?
Send Dave.
Yep. How great was it though, the throwback to the sheet? When they went when you go visit him later and there's the sheet, man, covering the girl up with the little eyes. Oh, that was great.
That was probably one of my favorite moments.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I loved that homage, and actually Brandon from our spinoff show, the PS Midnight Cast, we were talking about it afterwards, and he took that took that picture, and it's now his Facebook banner.
Nice.
I love that picture and that image, and like even the pumpkin in the tank was such a great companion piece to that, because not only did you have the original ghost, but you also had, if I remember correctly, I think when Lori kind of finds all her friends dead in the original, like there's a pumpkin kind of somewhere in that scene. Am I remembering that right?
You may have been. Yeah. I think I know what you're talking about.
Cause like watching all 10 of them in the past month, like my Halloweens are just kind of blurred.
I'm just watching all of them. Just gonna sit here and watch all the Halloweens, even the bad ones, even that number 3 that didn't make any sense.
I found a lot of respect for number 3. I'm not gonna lie, I hated it the first time I watched it, and going back.
Yeah, you watch it now and it's fine. It's like when you watch, but when you watched it right after 2, and you're like, all right, what? What just happened? The season of the witch.
The season of the witch is a. I've said this before on our show, and I'll say it again. A season of the witch is a step up from Halloween 2. I just was not a fan of Halloween 2, but I'm a fan of this movie, and this movie also kind of talks about the You know, we've talked about so many of the other characters in this film, but we haven't actually talked about the two really leading characters of this film. We have Michael Myers in one corner and Laurie Strode in another corner. The first film was really Michael's movie. This is Laurie's movie. You're kind of seeing her, how that one night really affected her. And I think that with H2O, like, I don't know where you stand with H2O. Like, to me, it, like, seeing her as an alcoholic kind of after this night, it really played to that realism. But that realism kind of got lost in the last act. Whereas this one, you are kind of seeing that she drinks to escape, but also that she has been... She's really been this like master tactician ever since.
Yeah, like doomsday prepping was great. Doomsday prepping for Michael Myers. That was fucking great. And you know what I absolutely loved about the whole thing though? Right in the end, there's still all there was fire. You didn't get to see, like, you can think, okay, yeah, he's gone. But it also opens up for that possibility that did he get out?
I'm gonna say, like, I really didn't see that coming. Like the whole knives thing, and like, I mean, she really went all out. Like,
did.
It was amazing, and it really plays and dives deep into the fact of, you know, this isn't just some man with a knife. Like, this is everything that Loomis said that it was. It pure, unconcentrated evil. Like. Yes. I mean, in human form, that's what Michael Myers is. And I feel like bringing him kind of down to that, they really grounded him in a way that I think it hadn't been grounded. Like, I know that Rob Zombie's films are like widely divisive among fans, but I respect the grounded nature of those films. And the first one kind of really lost Michael. But the second one, I think, is a better portion of just kind of because it deals a little bit more with, like, Laurie. But this one, man, freaking Nick Castle coming back into it, and James Jean Courtney, if I remember that name correctly, the gentleman who plays Michael.
He's gonna be at Monster Mania is coming up in I guess it's March.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he should come out.
We might be making an appearance for that. But Michael in this film is unstoppable.
He is. Absolutely. And he's great. One of the things I loved about that house, though, man, the house became its own little character. I mean, it's the ultimate character for any horror movie. It's like, you know, this would be great because you just hit the button, door closes. Okay, that room's checked. Next room, hit the button, door closes. That room's checked. She had it down, man. Locked down almost, what, all five of those rooms before she figured out which one he was in. That was great.
I think that was kind of one of my favorite scenes too, was that I think a lot of things that I found over the course of watching these sequels that I felt like a lot of the film had really lost was kind of they'd really lost the essence of who Michael was, because in the first one, if you look at the way that Michael moves and the way that Michael hunts and studies Laurie and her friends, I mean, it is immaculate. Michael is, out of all of the, like, you know, the big horror franchises, Michael, I think, is the smartest, you know, villain in the genre. I could be wrong.
He doesn't have to chase you. He just, you know, just find you later.
Exactly. He stands and studies. And that mannequin scene really kind of proved that, because I felt like after when they brought Michael back after Season of the Witch, they kind of started to dive more into this like supernatural realm. And when you kind of lose that supernatural realm of the character, you lose in essence what the original vision for him was. I mean, he was this really brilliant, really smart, really patient mastermind. And I feel like you really lose a lot of that kind of in the sequels, but that's something that they did very well here. He was very smart about how he did stuff. And, you know, we see that in some of the opening sequences with the doctor whose name I forgot, but who Laurie refers to as the new Loomis. And he's just been silent for 40 years. And that takes some serious patience. And, you know, when you kind of start to see his opportunity for the transfer, and he's so smart in the way that he does it, and I think that that's something that this film does extremely well, is they really return the character back to the way that Carpenter envisioned him.
Yes, absolutely. Did you catch the little bit where you decided to, I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with Friday the 13th as well. Did you see the little Jason Voorhees moment where he actually went down, grabbed the one dude that the stepfather or the father, and then he hit him in the closet in that room? Do you remember this scene?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right out of Jason Voorhees, man. That's what Jason always does. He'll kill you one place, and then he hides you in a fucking planter in the other room just for the jump scare. It works.
It does. And like that again, like that's something that's very smartly placed, because there's a sequence right before that where Laurie actually cuts off his either it's two or three fingers.
Two fingers off his hand. Shoots
him off. So he's bleeding out, and you start to see that all over the house, and he's leaving a trail behind. And like, I was like, man, I was like, that was kind of something that like I wasn't expecting, because, you know, it's like, okay, like I felt like, okay, they're setting it up to be kind of like the moment where they were going to verse pay homage to the original moment where she's hiding in the closet and he's coming for her. Now it's reversed where he's in the closet, she's coming for him. But right, seeing that dead body there and, you know, having that dead blood, having that bloody trail kind of signal, you know, like leading her to that, like that's again, that's just a brilliant tactician at work.
That was great. I love that scene. And then obviously when he throws her out the window and then she hits the dirt and then disappears. That was great too.
Like I've heard a lot of people say that, and that's actually probably one of my biggest gripes with the film. It's
I didn't like it.
That I had problems with, because I knew as soon as it happened, I was like, she's gonna get up. And it's not over. Like this is Laurie's movie. The way that they build it, it would just be anticlimactic to do that. And you know, obviously you're paying tribute to the original art of 1978's Halloween. And so it only makes sense that you would set something up to do that. And like, to me, like the third act is kind of where there are just moments that I kind of really didn't care for. Like there's a scene where her granddaughter is like running through the woods, and like the music composition from John Carpenter is gorgeous.
Yeah, it was.
But the scene takes so long and it slows the movie down.
I love where it ended, right into the firing range, and the girl just like freaking out. She's like looking around with all these mannequins and they're all blown up into pieces.
Like when she got there, crazy. I was like lucky. I would love to like accidentally stumble into someone's like wonderland of broken and shot up gnomes.
Yeah, right. That was fun. The whole movie, I had such a good time at it. Right, all the way, start to finish. I don't know where they could go necessarily from here. Obviously, that was nice that they introduced the other two, so they do have potential. And the fact that they didn't show you Michael's obviously burned, charred corpse, you just kind of assume it all went to plan, which is perfect to relaunch another one. But yeah, I mean, I do agree though. It does. I think this was a much better kind of pick up from, as opposed to that H2O. H2O was good, but I felt that it was, with the very last scene, I think that was too final for what it was, with her cutting his head off. I was like, that makes it so that you really can't, you have nowhere to go. It's not like he's going to go climb and then it'd be like zombie Michael.
I mean, they retcon that in Resurrection, which was terrible. Like,
yeah.
and like from like what I read,
like I didn't mince words there. You're just like, which was terrible.
Well, it's like the only way that the Dimension would make another film, because like they lost money on Curse of Michael Myers, so like they were very hesitant about coming into another film, and the only way that they were going to make another one was if it was going to have two sequels. So they knew going into it that it was going to be this like very final moment. And then they were going to like, they were going to retcon it in the next one. And like the Resurrection is such a mess. Yeah, but I definitely agree. Like, and I'm kind of curious where you go from here too, because for one, like she burns alive. Two, you don't see his body. Three, if you stay until the after, like if you stay all the way to the end of the credits, you hear him breathing.
So there you go. He'll be back.
And four, Danny McBride has actually said that when they pitched this, they pitched it as a 2-part story.
Well, there you go.
That's the thing, is like I don't know where you go from here though. Like
well,
obviously
with the granddaughter, I mean, you could really, with the way they set this one up with the granddaughter, you could put it all into almost a modern day time with her. And if you do it right, don't do it like they did it in the 80s. But if you do it right, you keep the same, I guess, the same way of telling the story. You could explore more of the supernatural side of Michael, as opposed to going and just making it another slasher flick after slasher flick after slasher flick, which they already, it's like, we already went that road. Let's try something different. Let's explore the supernatural side and see where that goes. I think that would be more fun.
Yeah, and I like, to me, like, when you look at, like, the different variations that they have taken this character throughout the years, because when you look at 1981's Halloween 2, it looks final because hospital blows up, he's in there, and Dr. Loomis is in there, and Dr. Loomis comes back, and he's got some minor scars in 4, and, like, Michael's been in this coma for, like, 10 years. So... Yeah. Like, I mean, they could do that route, but then, like, with Halloween 4, like, they try to introduce that supernatural. Like, the supernatural element definitely could work if you do it right.
That's what I mean, yeah. They always touch on it, but then they just jump right into the slasher bit. And it's like, okay, but you could have told a hell of a lot more story if you wanted to.
It's cool, yeah. And, like, I think that one thing that has been kind of like a missed opportunity for this franchise is I love psychology, and I love, the relationship between, like, psychology and, like, the occult, I think, is always really interesting. And I, like, they introduced, like, this Curse of Thorns storyline in, like, 5 and 6. And, like, there was a Michael Myers cult that was introduced or hinted at in the 6th film, but never kind of went anywhere. So, like, to me, I've always been kind of like, man, if you were going to go anywhere, kind of, you know, going modern day, like, you always have that room, always have that route to kind of take and go. Like, obviously, we see people kind of, you know, we take inspiration from these films, you know? Like, you look at Halloween, a couple years, you look at Halloween 1988, 1978, blah. 1980, we're introduced to Friday the 13th and a whole bunch of copycat, you know, slashers throughout the course of that. And then now, even in modern age, like, we have been constantly trying to... Blumhouse wouldn't even exist if it wasn't for Halloween and Carpenter. Like, he's said, he's gone on record and saying that, like, that's what inspired him to get into movies. So, you know, instead of, you know, creating something that we've already experienced before, why not take this into a direction, a new territory that we've never seen? And I mean, he's at Blumhouse now, so that's not saying that, you know, he couldn't cross over with another Blumhouse property. I think, you know, what if he came out during the Purge? Like, Michael Myers, Purge Night would be amazing.
If we're going to talk about, like, the what ifs, man, honestly, really, what I would have, I've drawn this, like, once just for funsies, just for me, but it would be fun just based on this classic old movie that had, and again, supernatural twist to it. How fun would it be for, like, Pumpkinhead and Michael Myers to be in the movie?
I'd be down for
think
that.
Think about it. The whole vengeance and everything else, and at the same time, I mean, there would be a very large body count, so that should be fun.
Yeah, but, and, I mean, yeah, it'd be a true rivalry.
Yeah, if you told it right, I'd like to see, you know, Myers show up again in the same kind of feeling with Pumpkinhead in the same movie.
Yeah, and so I before we jump into kind of like our mental health section of this, I want to ask, because this one particular scene has been very diverse, like this quote-unquote turn in the film has been very diverse among people that have seen it. The doctor putting on the mask. What did you think of that?
Well, it was clear to me. I mean, he's a fanboy. He loved working with Michael. He loved being a part of the lore of Michael. He wanted to be Michael, to a sense. So the fact that he was there, like you saw it, he was so excited to see Michael out and about. I mean, he arranged all of that just to let him loose, to see if he could get to experience that. So when I saw that, I was like, well, there you go. He's a fanboy. And unfortunately, it's going to end badly for him. And it did. But yeah, I got it. I understood it. And Yeah, it didn't bother me too much with him taking off Mike's mask and putting it on. I did want to see. I know they showed Nick in a few different scenes real quick, but I would have liked to see Nick Castle's whole face straight on just once. But
Yeah.
that's.
Like from the side, he almost, I don't know if you've like seen the trailer for it, but the upcoming Bruce Willis superhero film Glass, like he just looked like Bruce Willis from the side. Like that's all I saw, is all I kept seeing was freaking Bruce Willis from the Unbreakable movies.
Just real quick with a weird eye, and then that's it.
Yeah. And I was like, I'd be down to see Bruce Willis as like, you know, this like monster of weird evil and serial killerness.
Bruce Willis running around. You know what else he could show up in would be are you a fan of the Hatchet films at all?
I've been recommended them, but I have not seen them yet.
Oh my God, go see Hatchet, dude. It is fun. Kane Hodder has a blast as that character. It isn't meant to be taken seriously. Think Evil Dead.
Okay.
It's a fun horror movie.
Sweet,
And you
sweet.
get that feeling every single one of them. There's a lot of jump scares, but Adam Green does it. He that makes sure that you have fun.
I'll check it out. I'll check it out. I've been on the fence. I really liked the whole Doctor Twist. I'm with you. Like it was a really interesting concept to explore that they briefly did explore. I really wish that they would have, I don't know, like after seeing that, I was kind of like in my seat thinking, I was like, man, it would have been amazing to see Donald Pleasance like kind of like break down and take on the legacy of Michael Myers.
Oh, the whole idea that he lost it too, and he wanted to go ahead and just join him.
Donald Pleasance would have been perfect for that.
That would have been a different take, but it also opens up that question of, yeah, like for future films. I mean, what if not necessarily a cult, but if you just had a bunch of, interesting, like almost copycats or fanboys out there, and they want to go ahead and, they target the Strode family or. And just to kind of take on the mask. And then Mike,
Yeah.
and then it'd be weird to see Mike Myers come and basically wipe them all out just for mimicking him.
Yeah, be kind of like the opening to like the Dark Knight with like Batman's copycats, but it would
Oh,
just
yeah.
be darker and it would be something we haven't seen before. So like I'd be cool with that. But this like the doctor, like after he gets back and Michael pulls him out of the car and just stomps on his face and explodes his brains. Gotta say, probably one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie.
That was great. And I loved how they really captured that. Like you can tell this was like everything that he did, especially when he got a hold of somebody, it wasn't natural. Like I love that they captured that. It wasn't like he just like, cracked their neck and that was it. The one dude's head's bent completely like backwards and twisted up. And then the one dude's head gets he gets like fucking mutilated, and then the one guy he decides to have fun with and makes a jack-o'-lantern out of his head with the flashlight. I
Oh,
love
so good, so good. So many memorable. Like they got really creative with the deaths in this, and that's something that like I think I was really when I heard Danny McBride was coming on to do this, like to write this film, but and then you had the director of Pineapple Express coming on to do this film, and I was like. I was a little bit leery, but then they announced Carpenter coming on to do the film, and then they announced Jamie Lee Curtis coming on to do this film, and then you see films like Get Out and A Quiet Place, films from known comedians like Jordan Peele and John Krasinski, and you just are left in awe of where these, you know, otherwise very comedic guys have been going because up until Get Out, like Jordan Peele had only done comedy for like 10, 15 years, and then Get Out was kind of just this brilliant masterpiece that came out of nowhere, and A Quiet Place was the very same way. And you look at Halloween, and you look at just the kind of way that they did stuff, like lighting up a cop's like head, or twisting a head backwards, and you know, having a little kid respond to Michael Myers the way that he did. Like, there are just such these like little creative moments, but you can also kind of see where there's a little bit of like comedic overlays to that. And I think that that's another thing that really speaks to the brilliance of this film.
Well, yes. And they also always have said that I forget who it was, but the comedy is considered to be one of the absolute hardest forms of entertainment, with timing and everything else that has to come into play. So that's why they say that after, you know, if you see these comedians and then they go and do something dark, take the late Robin Williams, when he went from I forget what the name of the film was, but he was playing like the semi like serial killer, and Al Pacino's in it as well. The movie escapes me. Yes, but again, it's almost creepy that he was able to just switch gears and do that. But they say that, like I said, if comedy is so hard, then any of the other ones would probably be almost a walk in the park for them.
Yeah, another great Williams performance. If you guys have never seen it, is 1 Hour Photo. He's super.
Oh yeah, that's the other one. Yeah, that was so crazy. And then what was it? Final Cut. That was probably one of my favorites.
Yeah, Final Cut, I think, is a movie that gets underplayed a lot in his repertoire.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Such a great idea.
It is. And we're moving on to Roads to Hope. This is the point in our show where we talk about a theme of mental health and or hope. And from the episode source material, and for this one, we are looking at kind of how we are going to explore how the events of 1978's John Carpenter's Halloween really shaped the lore of who Laurie Strode is 40 years later in this film. And right from the get-go, when you meet Laurie, you can just tell that she is broken. And to like, there's a, when she's kind of start opening up and talking about how this thing has affected her, like she's been a victim of divorce, twice divorced. She doesn't talk to her granddaughter. She doesn't talk to her daughter. Her daughter was taken away from her. You know, she's just kind of like you originally said, like her turned her house into this like doomsday machine. Like she was prepared, and like she was just devastated by it. She put all her time and energy into crafting this and kind of isolated herself almost from the rest of the world. And you kind of see the toll that it takes on there. And I think one of the best scenes in this film is the scene where she's at the restaurant after she sees him, and she's waiting for him, and she just sees his body, and she just breaks down at the restaurant, says, you know, I saw him, and it was such a trigger point for her. And I think that, you know, opening up has a lot of value and a lot of merit when you're talking about these tragic events and these things that stay with you. If you can just have one person in your corner, it really does make a difference, and it really does mean life or death for some people.
Well said.
I mean, like, how did you kind of think that they handled the Laurie Strode aspect with kind of her mental health throughout the course of this film?
Well, I liked it. I mean, you could see, I mean, you're talking about someone that was terrorized. I mean, absolutely terrorized. The idea that, you know, you had this man chasing you for an entire night once in your life. And that's going to mess you up. I mean, I know they've touched on it in other films where they just show that she's like got a collection of medication. I like the road that they took in this one, where she's basically just dedicated her whole life to training her children on how to deal with this. And at the same time, I mean, yeah, it's not the best way of doing it. And look, even by, I like how they touched on that too. Like, you know, okay, well, child services stepped in and had to take away her daughter because of how she was raising her. And I mean, I think it was well done, but yeah, I think that, you know, that if you go through some trauma like that, that you should obviously, I don't know that you would want to go out and get the whole doomsday prep house going, but at the same time, maybe just reach out and have somebody to talk to. I mean, on a daily basis, if something is traumatic as being, you know, as what she's gone, when she went through, I mean, you would need to have friends and family constantly around you, as opposed to what she did, which was the opposite, really. She shut herself down, locked herself in a house out in the middle of nowhere, and dealt with it in her own way.
Yeah, and ultimately, I think one of the most empowering images in all of this, I've read articles where this film is kind of being called the movie of the Me Too movement, where you're seeing how this tragic event is empowering women now. I think one of the best scenes in this film that kind of demonstrates that is the scene where Michael's looking up at these three generations of Strodes that just outsmarted him, and they're just standing there. Like, you know, they obviously, Lori doesn't beat him. It's by herself. It is through the help of granddaughter and daughter and herself. Like, it's like this team up. And I feel like that's probably one of the most powerful, like, statements in this entire film, is that, you know, when you allow other people into your tragedy, there's power in that. And that's one of the scenes that just really sticks with me, even, you know, almost a week after seeing it.
And I really liked the scene too with her daughter that didn't want to believe it, but then when she did, and when she was down in the basement, it was almost like she remembered everything that her mother taught her, and went right for her one rifle that she had, like, carved her name into and whatnot. That was great. It was like, okay, so you were right, and you did good by training me, because now I know what to do. Couldn't pull the trigger in the end, but it was nice to see that, you know, that she acknowledged everything that her mom taught her.
Yeah, and so there's power in numbers. So if you guys are struggling, please reach out, because there's power in numbers and there's power in conversation, and that's the reason we push the content we do. So that you guys can know that you're not alone. Everyone that produces this content has been with you, has been in your shoes. And with that, I'm gonna. What would you rate this on a scale of 1 to 5?
Oh, for the movie?
Yes.
Oh, it's a 5, man.
5. Fair enough.
It's a 6.
I'm going to go 4.5 just because of some of the issues that I had in the last act, but I really love this movie. If you guys have made it this far and haven't seen Halloween, hopefully we have spoiled the crap out of you for it.
Oh, no. I ruined the whole movie for you. Enjoy.
it's like spark notes, you know? It just happens. I mean, Halloween set records this past weekend in its opening. Not only is it the second high, it's the second highest grossing weekend for an October release. It is the highest grossing release for with a female lead, and it is the highest grossing film ever with a female lead over 55. So congratulations to Halloween. It's well deserved. So for us here at Victims and Villains, we're giving, between Blair and myself, we're going to give Halloween a 4.75 out of 5. I think I added that right. Math is hard in your head.
Fair enough.
Where can people find you online, though?
Oh, for me? I think the easiest thing to do, go hit my IG or my Instagram up at just BlairWeb77. You can go to Facebook. You can find me there. You can find me at holdupmagazine.com if you're looking for the magazine. If you want Ghostman, it's www.ghostmanthecomicbook.com. Also, feel free to check out the crew that I'm currently rolling with, which is the Living Corpse Crew, which is corpsecrew.net. The next few gigs that I have, we'll be doing signings at the comic book shop up here in Wilmington, Delaware. That's next weekend for the Halloween celebration. And the weekend after that, I'll be doing Get Yourself Drawn as Michael Myers, or Get a Michael Myers Drawn for You with John Passarella, who did the novelization of that, the new Halloween movie, along with Supernatural.
And you guys can find us everywhere, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and iTunes. Make sure that you guys like, follow, and subscribe to us. And if you guys like what we stand for, make sure that you guys support us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/victimsandvillains. Consider being a part of our Facebook group, Hope Culture, and sign up for our monthly newsletter. Not to mention, again, you guys can go to victimsandvillains.net/hope for resources if you guys are struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression. And until next time, remember to keep talking nerd, talking hope, and speaking nothing else. And just because there's fire, don't mean it did.